Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In recent years, we've seen strides forward in palliative care. That's medical care that focuses on providing relief from the symptoms and stress of serious illness. We've also seen incredible strides in the availability of hospice care, designed to give support and comfort to people in the final phase of a terminal illness. And now there's a new movement in end-of-life care. It's called death midwifery. And my next guest is a death midwife. She also teaches others about death midwifery. Angie Buchanan is based in Wisconsin, but she'll be teaching a three-day certification class in Iowa next week. Hello, Angie.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Now, first of all, just help us understand what death midwifery is. What does a death midwife do?
Well, we are non-medical helpers that work alongside and in cooperation with the existing medical team. We're holistic and spiritual companions to anyone at the end of life. So we sort of fill the gap between the medical profession and the funeral industry. There's a lot of room in there that just seems to be empty without being paid attention to. And we flow between those rocks of the medical and the funeral industry professions.
Tell me what you saw, what you experienced that made you think this is a place where I can be of assistance and there's a need.
Well, not everyone can deal with being in the presence of someone who is dying or attending to a dead body. It's a gift to be able to stand in that space. And since I was very young, I've been comfortable there, from the deaths of pets as I was growing up to the death of my son in my early 20s. It's been something that I have been able to navigate and to be able to provide comfort and strength during that time for as long as I can remember. And my career has led me into some odd places. I was in law enforcement for a while, and those are the experiences that you have with the deaths that are not necessarily pretty and happening at home and in a hospital. But because of my ability to be present in those spaces, I often found myself being called by colleagues to come and be with them or with a dying loved one, because I was able to be present in that space.
As I mentioned earlier, there have been some pretty tremendous strides forward in end-of-life care, with palliative care, with hospice care. I want you to really describe the gap that you see, as our ideas about death are changing, about our needs at end-of-life are changing. What was the gap? What are the needs that you feel a death midwife needs to fill?
I think, first of all, we need to talk about the idea that there is nothing wrong with death, that it doesn't need to be fixed, and that there are things worse than death. So to be able to face death as the natural end of life is important. We have birth, and then we have life, and then we have death. Death is not the opposite of life. It's the opposite of birth. So for us to recognize that there's a spoiler alert out there, nobody gets out alive, we have become, in a death-denying society, we have become unable to absorb that. And so it becomes almost urgent that we have to focus everything on not dying. And avoiding death is a natural thing, but fear of death is not inherent. It's cultural. So for us to sort of bring that back around where we're not warehousing our dying and turning them completely over to the medical profession until it's time for the funeral industry to step in, we are denying ourselves our final rite of passage. We plan for weddings, we plan for birthdays, graduations, even retirements, and then we act like we're not going to die, and we're going to just leave it all to everybody else to handle after we die, which puts an unnecessary financial burden and emotional burden on people who are in a very vulnerable spot because we're not willing to talk about this. And so the idea that we can be present for people in the sacred space of that final exhale, and I would add that no matter what you believe, religiously or spiritually, we can all agree that there is a point in time when that final breath happens, that whatever it is that animates us is no more, and we cease to be human. And that space is sacred, and it deserves attention, and it deserves companionship. We come into the world, and we're spoken to softly and wrapped in soft blankets, and the lights are low, and we're held and stroked and cuddled. And why shouldn't that be the way we die?
A lot of what you're saying sounds like what the goal is in hospice care. And of course, the hospice workers, there are many volunteers who work in hospice, but there are also nurses and medical professionals who work in hospice as well. What do you offer that is different from that?
There are a couple of things. First of all, hospice is medically prescribed. It's medically sourced, and they're very strictly regulated on what they can do and how they can interact with families. A death midwife can step in at any point in time from first diagnosis or even from being a healthy individual to start helping families do their death plans. So to make sure that they understand what documents they will need in order for their final wishes to be met, and to know where to obtain those documents, and how to make sure that their plans are in order, how to discuss what it is that they want. And it can be everything from what they want at their funeral services, what readings or poetry or music, to how they want their body disposed of, because most people think that there are just a couple of things that you can do for body disposition, mainly traditional burial or cremation. Green burial is sort of rising to the surface, but a lot of people don't really understand what that means. And traditional burial is completely unsustainable. We're dumping hundreds of thousands of gallons of embalming fluid into our soil and groundwater every year, and it's toxic. Our cemeteries are becoming toxic waste dumps, and it's not sustainable. So there are several new options available, and some creative options available for body disposition, and some things that people need to know with regard to perhaps maybe someone who wants to donate their body to science. You need to know what the parameters of that are. You can't just simply say, I want to donate my body to Harvard, because maybe Harvard isn't accepting somebody that doesn't have their appendix. So these are the kinds of conversations that we can have with people. And in the states where it's permissible, we can guide a family through having a home funeral as opposed to using a funeral home at the cost of many thousands of dollars. We can involve the family in lots of different aspects of keeping their beloved dead at home and caring for them the way that we used to do 125 years ago before embalming in funeral homes became a thing.
You mentioned that a death midwife can come into the process at first diagnosis, but it also sounds to me like these are services that some people might seek before they ever get sick at all in thinking about how they want their own funerals carried out.
Yes, absolutely. And we encourage people to think about this, but also to think about it more than just once. There are lots of considerations. A young couple that came to me recently because they just bought a house and are planning to start a family needed to know what their options were. But 5 years from now, when they have one child, maybe two, and their assets have changed and, you know, things change. So we encourage people to review their documents annually because people die, people get divorced, assets change, houses get sold. So this is an annual thing, and we have a community that actually comes together and has a document party every year to just go over your documents to make sure that everything is still valid and in order.
So tell me about this certification process. As you are called a certified death midwife, is there actually a national association of death midwives that the certification comes from?
Not yet, but it is in the works. And the idea is we are being guided by the Institute of Credentialing Excellence, which holds the nursing board certifications and licensures and things like that. So that's kind of exciting that they're willing to provide information for us and guide us through this process. But the idea is not to professionalize the field of death midwifery. We're reclaiming it, and we want to protect it. And in the 1990s, the American Medical Association came to massage therapists and essentially said, you're nothing but sex workers, so we're going to take you under our wing and professionalize you, and you're not going to be able to operate as massage therapists unless you're under our umbrella. And massage therapists organized and ended up going back to the American Medical Association and saying, thank you very much, but we're going to self-regulate. And that is the sort of thing that we want to do. We would like to have the parameters of core information that our death midwives will have been educated in. But to keep it as a folkway, a grassroots tradition of compassionate care, so that we can protect ourselves from being absorbed by either the medical profession or the funeral industry, because we're neither.
How long have you been doing this, Angie?
Well, I started doing it as, this is difficult to answer because I've been a death midwife the best part of my life, the better part of my life, and I've always been the one that was there, and I've seen many, many people pass over and been able to be present. But it wasn't until the early 2000s that I discovered the work of Nora Cederwind Young out of Washington State, and she was one of the foremothers of the National Home Funeral Alliance, as well as death midwifery. And so I got to know Nora and ended up bringing her in starting in 2006 to talk about what it was that she was doing. By 2011, I was organizing some specific training programs that she was offering here in my area, bringing her into our area from Washington. And then just continued to do that. I think I had her here 4 or 5 times by then. And then I received a call in either 2013 or 2014 that she wanted me to come to Washington because she had been given 10 days to live. And I went out there and she asked me to continue with the teaching, which I agreed to do. Gratefully, thankfully, Nora is still living, and so she did not die as had been her sentence, and But I went ahead and progressed with the training program and developing it into some things that I thought were more helpful and specific, and made it a little bit longer. And so that was kind of how that got started.
So in your work, when you took on this role more formally, was there a moment where you really realized that what you were doing was really making a difference? Can you explain or describe a moment like that to me?
Oh, there are dozens of moments like that. The idea that think of it with birth midwives, you have a birth plan, and you've got somebody that's kind of holding your hand all along the way. It's not just a check-in and you get an hour interview and then you cry on cue for 4-hour increments. And then, you know, medical people come and go and observe and do their testing. This is a companionship, and it is such a comfort to be able to be with a family and to guide them and to let them know that they have options. I think that seeing that family embrace the idea that it's okay to talk about death with the person that's dying. It's okay to be sad. We don't have to deny the fact that this person's leaving, and we don't have to turn their body over to strangers. We can have a home funeral. We can take care of them. We can bathe them. We can caress them. We can wrap our family quilts around them. And we don't have to disappear them behind the curtain because of misinformation. And the misinformation has been that grandma is a public health hazard, and that dead bodies carry disease, and that they decay at rapid pace. These are misconceptions.
Angie, we're out of time. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Angie Buchanan is a death midwife. She's based in Wisconsin, but she'll be teaching a 3-day certification class in Iowa next week. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.